is one of the guys you wanted to talk about.
Well, Barton McLean, yeah, he's a very interesting, you know, character. Very educated man. He wanted to get into films. The funny story he once told was that he wanted to get into movies, so he began to really work out. He says, I want to work out, and I want to become a big guy so that I can be the hero and tear villains apart. But quite the opposite happened. He became one of the movie's most famous villains, playing gangsters and bad guys in a number of Warner Brothers films.
And he always played bad cops, right? Dirty cops.
In some films he did, yeah. But don't forget he also did the Torchy Blaine series with Glenda Farrell.
I just read that. I didn't see that. Yeah, so he did many parts.
So he played kind of a good guy in that. He also played a good guy in the Henry Fonda gangster film, You Only Live Once. Played a good cop in the George Raft movie, Red Light. But for the most part, yeah, he was in G-Men, Bullets or Ballots, Dr. Socrates. He usually played, the big mouth gangster there.
So he was also in High Sierra.
He played the crooked cop in High Sierra, yep.
And Bullets or Ballots, all these things. But what I find fascinating is that he was on the Monkees. Sorry, Barton. My eyes did to that. He was on the Monkees? Wow. And then I remembered him. Basically, all these guys worked incredibly till the end of their death.
Yeah.
And he then went on to I Dream of Jeannie, playing General Peterson.
Yes, he did.
35 episodes. Go figure. Yeah. So he was a gangsta and a general.
He kept working.
As all of them did until their death, which I found to be really impressive. Let's get to our...
I was going to mention, he didn't play gangsters, but he was a Warner Brothers staple in the 40s with George Tobias. Don't forget, he ended up playing Mr. Kravitz on Bewitched.
Oh, I love him.
He was great, I love him
in the movies, and I loved him as Abner Kravitz. And he
wonderful actor.
I own all the Bewitched DVDs, but I also have it on Amazon. And the first Gladys was the only Gladys. Alice Pierce, she was fabulous, and she died of cancer. And then they had that horrible one to replace. She had no pathos, no nothing. She was just a caricature. But Alice Pierce was really a wonderful actress, and she had done many films. And she, I really liked her. That's just a little trivia from classic TV, you guys. Let's talk about Richard Widmark as Tommy... That bad boy, Tommy Udo.
Well, you know what the thing is, you know, think about the gangsters of the 1930s. I mean, that whole era pretty much came to an end with the Public Enemy, the Roaring Twenties with Cagney, Angel with 30 Faces. Moved into the 40s, we had Humphrey Bogart as Mad Dog Roy Earle.
Who turned around the role? That's why you named the book, George Raft.
Well, yeah, he turned down. Well, he turned the role down. So did Paul Muni, and Bogart got the part of Roy Earle, and in High Sierra. Then, of course, he did The Big Shot, and then post World War II, we saw a change in a lot of the gangster movies and the characters being portrayed in those films. We went into kind of more of a psychotic type of not the suave nightclub gangster.
Right.
We had the Tommy Udos, and we had the Chesters, played by Neville Brand in DOA. You know, we had Lawrence Tierney popping into the
we're going to get to him.
Playing his psychotic characters he played in Born to Kill, The Devil Thumbs a Ride, pictures of that type. So the whole genre actually took on, of course, that was the film noir, wasn't it?
Yes.
That was the beginning of film noir. And the characters, the gangsters became a lot more ruthless, and they, were more of a psychopathic variety.
And Tommy Udo certainly was. And this was the kiss of death.
He led the way, I think. He led the way to the psychopathic gangster.
Kiss of death. You guys will not know him. He is that fiend, the giggling fiend that takes an old lady in a wheelchair and pushes her down the stairs and laughs hysterically. And he said he couldn't, once he saw it and he saw the giggling, he said he was horrified to see himself in that role. But when he played those kind of roles, people would come up to him, want to take him on. Like a lot of these guys, oh, you're so tough. You're not so tough. I can beat you up, like regular jars.
Well, you know, that's a really interesting point too, actually, Grace, is these poor actors who play tough guys. And we can go into Tierney again here. But guys like George Raft, Bogart. But Bogart sometimes would actually bring it on himself because he had a penchant for needling people.
He did.
But a lot of these actors would go into nightclubs or they go out somewhere.
Edward G. Robinson, please. Yeah.
Well, Robinson was more of a homebody, as was Cagney. They didn't really, you know, associate with too many of these things.
No.
But some of these guys would go out to these places, these tough guys, and, you know, you get some drunk there who's trying to impress his pals or his girlfriend.
Or his girlfriend, so yeah.
I'm gonna see how tough this guy really is, eh? And then try to challenge George Raft to a fight or something. And, you know, who would get the bad publicity would be George Raft, because Raft would try to avoid these situations. I'm using this as an example.
Right.
But sometimes these guys would be persistent, and, you know, Raft would, you know, have to, you know, throw a few punches or whatever to get this guy out of his way, and then he'd get the, you know, George Raft is a real life tough guy and stuff like that. And unfortunately, guys who played gangster actors or played gangster parts, they were the ones who were usually, you know, the ones who would get this kind of
badgering by these
yeah,
insecure men who had to prove that they were big tough guys and I can take them on.
Exactly.
Look at me. That's horrible,
yeah,
though, when you think about it. Yeah, and Richard Widmark was totally kumbaya. He said he felt horrible after he saw that and people hated him. And he played other bad guys. You want to tell us about him?
Well, after he did Kiss of Death, he did a film called The Street with No Name, where he played another gangster. And then he did a Roadhouse with Cornel Wilde.
And Ida Lupino, right?
Ida Lupino, of course.
He was cray-cray.
And then after that, he did, yep, then he did Yellow Skies with Gregory Peck. So he was pretty much getting typecast into playing a villain. And then he did a film called Panic in the Streets, where he played a health inspector, I believe it was.
I just saw that. Yeah, I had just seen that movie.
Very good film.
It is.
Yes. So he was trying to change his image because he didn't want to be, you know, typecast as a bad guy. Because most of these people, as you know, they played those parts, but they were actually very gentle people in real life.
Yeah, he said that he went fishing once, and he caught a fish, and he felt horrible that he killed a fish. And he was, he fought for gun control. He said he didn't own a gun. He would never own a gun. And he was not one of these, you know, tough guy, I'm going to get you, buddy. And he was very good in that film. Also, he did what's the film I'm thinking of? Oh, the one where he plays that horrible racist with...
No Way Out with Sidney Poitier.
Yeah, and they were great friends. They did three films together.
They were great friends. In fact, from what I heard once, that after every, you know, scene where he had to kind of degrade Sidney Poitier's character, Widmark would apologize to him. And Sidney would say, you're just playing a part. It's not you, you know. They
yes.
were great friends. In fact, when Sidney Poitier got the Lifetime Award from the AFI, I mean, Widmark was one of the people who spoke about him.
And vice versa.
They were great friends.
Yeah.
And exactly.
When,
I mean, they were very good friends.
Yeah. But he was great. I got to say, he was great in that as well. He was
loathsome. And you know what's really interesting? I don't know if you're familiar with this, but Widmark did a film a few years after he did Kiss of Death. It was called O. Henry's Full House.
Oh, yeah.
What story was that? He was in the one called The Clarion Call, and he basically reprises the role of Tommy Udo right down to that crazy giggle. It's great fun to watch because if you were familiar with Kiss of Death and you watch that picture, I mean, it's like, my God, he's played the same part again.
I didn't see that.
It's great fun. Try to catch it. But it plays on TCM.
Yeah, I know.
I've
seen The Gifts of Magi, The Final Leaf, things like that, but I missed him. So I have to make sure I catch him.
It's the second episode in the movie after the Charles Laughton one. And it's just great because, I mean, that is Tommy Udo.
Yeah, he was fabulous in that. And that giggle, oh my God. This is an interesting story about that horrible, you know, the director, Mr. What's his name? The legendary. What's his name? He did I'm trying to think of his name. He did the John Wayne movie and Maureen. John Ford. That's who it is.
Oh, John Ford, yeah.
And he was a nasty little booger. So he appeared in two Westerns by the great John Ford with co-star James Stewart and in Two Row Together. And Ford feuded with Jimmy Stewart over his hat. Stewart insisted on wearing the same hat he had for a decade of highly successful Westerns that had made him one of the top box office stars of the 50s. Both he and Woodmark were hard of hearing. That's why Woodmark did not go to World War II, but he was like air raid guide, and he entertained the troops. And he had some kind of thing with his ear. He was young. And hard of hearing, as well as balding, and in need from the makeup department wig makers. So Ford would sit himself far away from them while directing scenes and then give them directions in a barely audible voice. When neither one of the stars could hear the director, Ford theatrically announced to his crew that after over 40 years in the business, he was reduced to directing two deaf toupees. What a meanie, right? Two deaf toupees. Well,
you know, the stories of Ford are legendary.
Oh, I know.
One of my good friends was John Agar, and John Agar played in Ford Apache, his first movie, actually. And he said that Ford could be just a real sadist. But he said John Agar basically said he would do that because he was always trying to get the best performance out of an actor. So he would really put him through hell, like he did with John Wayne in Stagecoach and Ward Bond in films like.
And Maureen O'Sullivan, didn't she slap his face? He was really mean to her.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, you know, if that was his directing technique, I mean, it certainly worked because he created some great films and got great performances, but that's a hell of a way to do it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It wasn't Maureen O'Sullivan. It's Maureen O'Hara. Sorry, kids.
Maureen O'Hara, yes.
Yes. And she was no lady.
She was pretty tough, too, though.
She was not going to take no guff from him. That is for sure. Okay, let's go to somebody we skipped. From the 30s, who I really like, and you and I are both confused why he didn't become a bigger star, and that is Jack LaRue.
Jack LaRue, wonderful man. Oh,
I had the pleasure of meeting
him. I met him, yes, and he was a gentleman, the sweetest guy you could ever imagine. He had the face of a gangster. He should have really been further along in his career. He had his big break with the story of Temple Drake, where he played Trigger, a role that George Raft turned down. But that seemed to be his high point. Following that, he kind of went into secondary roles, usually playing gangsters, with the exception of A Farewell to Arms, where he played a priest. And Captain Courageous.
I just want to ask you for a moment. I'm sorry I butted in on you. I sent you Virtue. Did you watch it?
I haven't seen that yet. No, I'm going to watch that because I love
Bad boy. He Carol Lombard plays a prostitute. You guys can watch it on YouTube. You can find it, and it's also, if you have Amazon Prime, you can find it. And she marries Pat O'Brien. He has no idea before he marries her that she was a hooker. But the best people in this film were Mayo Methow, who was Bogey's wife, and Jack LaRue. His name was Toots O'Neill. He played Toots O'Neill in this, and he was so good in this. And you wonder, when you see the story of Temple Drake and Virtue, and I'm like, he was so good. He really was a good actor. And it's like,
he was a great actor.
What happened?
He had a presence about him.
He was good looking. He was a very good looking man. And he was sinister as well. That snarl and that kind of. But he had something. He had presence, I thought.
Well, I'll tell you something. As far as I'm concerned, I think he did a much better part as Trigger than George Raft would have done.
I agree.
Because he did have that look. He looked evil, you know. And he played gangsters in films like The Mouthpiece. He played a gangster in Three on a Match. One of the gang that Bogart's involved.
Yes, I remember him in that. Yeah.
Yep, he's smoking a cigar in that one.
And wasn't he supposed to be one of the guys who killed, the kid, right? Because they wanted Lyle Talbot.
They were going to kill the kid until she jumps out the window.
What a great film! She was fabulous. That's a great film. I love
that. And here's something else: he also played the trigger man who kills Boris Karloff in the film Night World. That also has a part for George Raft in that. So actually, Raft and LaRue, who were good friends in real life, they did actually make a film together, though they're not in the same scenes.
So when did you meet LaRue?
Oh gosh, let's go back in the 70s. He was living in an apartment with his sister at the time. And I happened to be in California. And that's around the time I was with Lloyd Nolan. And I was meeting all these guys at that time. It was
How cool.
a pretty good time of my life, actually.
I would
and
love
Lloyd
to
Nolan
have
had me over
dudes.
To his house, and we talked about his films and did the interview with them. And
who had you over to the house?
Pardon me?
Who had you over to his house?
Lloyd Nolan.
Yeah, you know, and I never knew, you know, that he was such a gangster guy until I really started getting into all of these movies, because I knew him from Peyton Place as that nice doctor.
Oh, no.
He was
his early career. Well, he was, of course, in G-Men with Cagney. He played the G-Men with mm-hmm. Kiel based on an incident. He was in two George Raft films in the 30s where he played the gangster. Then he was in The House Across the Bay with George Raft where he played a crooked lawyer. He was in Blues in the Night, Johnny.
Oh,
Hall.
I love Blues in the Night. What a great
films
film.
Of that type.
Underrated.
Oh, yeah.
Very good. And so he was just a nice, pleasant chap to yak with.
He was
with.
A great guy. Right away he told me, he says, no, Mr. Nolan, call me Lloyd. I mean, he was terrific. I mean, yeah, sweet, sweet man. As was Mark Lawrence, as was Mike Mazurki.
Now, who was Mark Lawrence?
Pardon me?
Who was Mark Lawrence? Give us a little.
Mark Lawrence, he probably played more gangsters than anybody else in movies.
Fill us in.
He was never a star. He was always like that second, third player in these films. But he was pretty much typecast as a gangster. I'm trying to think of a film that you would know him from. You'd recognize him, just look at his face, because he had a very distinctive look. He was another guy like LaRue who just had that gangster look to him, but was a real sweetheart. Did a lot of films at Warner Brothers, usually playing characters named Lefty.
that's a nice one.
That was
oh, wait a minute. Is he the one who played... He was a good-looking dude. Was he in Each Dawn I Die? Was he
No, he wasn't in Each Dawn I Die. He was in Invisible Stripes. That was George's second film for Warner Brothers with Bogart. He played Lefty. He played Lefty in that film. He was one of the Bogart gang.
The Lefties. I'm thinking of another
It's hard to find a film that you would, you know, he was in The Man with the Golden Gun. That was a later film he did with,
Sinatra.
James Bond picture.
Oh, no, The Golden Arm. I'm thinking of a different
No,
sorry,
that was,
guys.
No, the
yeah.
man, that was a James Bond film. He played the hitman in the beginning of the film who challenges Christopher Lee to a duel, and he gets killed. You would recognize him. He was all over the place. He's done, you know, TV, movies, tons of films.
Wait,
but never a star.
But a working actor, which
oh,
only
totally
has 10%. And you met him and you liked him a lot.
Oh, he was a great guy. I was going to work on a book with him, actually, but unfortunately he'd gotten pretty old by that point. We were going to do a book based on his huge film career. I mean, he was in movies since 1932. And he worked with everybody from Abbott and Costello to George Zucco. I mean, he had a huge career.
George Zucco was quite the character. Oh, my.
Well, he was another character we could talk about as well, absolutely. But I was going to mention, did you ever see The Asphalt Jungle?
No.
Okay.
Isn't that Marilyn's, one of Marilyn's first films?
That was one of Marilyn's first films, Sterling Hayden. James Whitmore, Louis Kelhern, and Mark Lawrence actually played Cobby in that film. So he was the money man.
He wasn't Lefty.
Prior to the heist.
He was Righty.
He wasn't Lefty. He was Cobby in that.
You know, this
same
is,
difference, I guess, overall.
This is a guy I'm thinking of here, Edward Pauly, who was very attractive.
Yes.
And he did you meet him?
No. Oh gosh, no, I never met him. No. No, he was a second rate, one of those second rate Warner gangster actors too. Was in G-Men. He was in Each Dawn I Die.
Who was he in that? I'm trying to think. What he was one of the gangsters, and I can't think of which one he was.
In which film?
He was one of the inmates in Each Dawn I Die, and I'm trying to think
yes,
of which one he was.
He was boy. There was Stanley Ridges, Edward Pauly. Edward Pauly. I can't remember the character's name. I remember Stanley Ridges played Muller. Edward Pauly, I know he had the greasy hair hanging in his eyes. I remember that part, but I can't remember the character's name offhand.
What, he wasn't one of the Stoolies, right?
No, he was one of the guys who were involved in that prison break at the end with Raft.
Yeah. Probably the one who wanted to kill that horrible. I said, get out of here.
Yeah, John Ray. Ray, the prison guard.
He was horrible. Yes. It's like, ouch. I bet his voice hurt after that show.
Oh, yeah, he gets a good ending to him, just like Hume Cronin does in Brute Force.
Oh, I know. They deserved it. And I hate to think of violence, but some people really do deserve that end. I remember him most when I was reading about it, Chauffeur Burns. Burns and 13 Women. And he played 13 Women was about Myrna Loy starred. She was half, I don't know, she was mixed race. And she had a vendetta against these women because somebody took her into a school and they didn't accept her. They made fun of her. They were just major mean girls. And so she used the power of hypnosis and psychology in sending them, your death is going to be on this day. So then they're like, oh, I'm all nervous. And then they end up dying. And Irene, you never saw that?
No, I never saw that film. No.
You got to
no,
see it. No. And Irene,
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
I have to say, those women were not nice women. They were totally mean. Why would you bother with us? Why? And Ricardo Cortez is in there, who I adore. I love Ricardo Cortez.
Well, there's another guy who played his fair amount of hoodlums in movies too.
Yes, I loved him. And it's so funny. He's from the East Side, Lower East Side. And I think his parents were Hungarian Jewish immigrants. And he had a total.
Yes, his real name was His real name was Jacob Kratz.
Yeah, but they wanted a Latin lover, hence Ricardo Cortez.
And he looked the part, yes. He did. He definitely, yes.
Oh, he was great. I loved him. He was very cute. Why don't we talk about one of my favorites, and what a character, Mr. Lawrence Tierney.
Oh, boy, that's a whole show in itself, isn't it?
It is. I mean, he could be a whole show.
He was quite an interesting character. There's a guy who once said he drank away 7 careers, and he did. I mean, he lived an off-screen life that would have been the envy of John Dillinger, who he played back in 1945 for Monogram Pictures. He, was a catalog model, got into acting, did some films for RKO with Val Lewton, like Ghost Ship and Youth Runs Wild. Got his big break with Dillinger. From there, began making, low-budget pictures for Monogram. Could have been on the brink of stardom, but he, came to his own career with his outrageous behavior. I mean, some of those pictures of him you see being hauled into a police station after a drunken brawl, his face is like raw hamburger. I mean, but this guy lived is just amazing. Yet he was a great actor.
He
had a lot
really
of potential.
You know what I saw funny? They had like Juvenile Delinquent Day on Turner Classic Movies last week. And he was in a film and he played Bonita Granville's dude. He was like one of those, men who were kind of on the rough side. But he wasn't bad. And it was so funny to see him in that kind of a movie.
Well, that was the film called Youth Runs Wild
yes.
that he made with for Val Lewton at RKO. Yeah.
Oh, yes. And he did the other one for Val Lewton, Ghost Ship. And he got a terrible end on that.
Oh, yeah. That was a horrible ending. He gets in that picture, yeah.
Ooh, ouch.
And then he also played with John Wayne. He had a brief scene towards the end of the movie Back to Bataan as a naval lieutenant. Which is actually a really good part, a very normal part from the play. He plays a nice guy, a good guy, not typical Lawrence Tierney you see in those other films he's made.
So
after Dillinger, he became, he became kind of like the ultimate bad boy on screen and off.
And they said they would not play it in Chicago because it was too graphic and violent. And, right? It was banned there for a while.
Well, the thing about the movie Dillinger, which is interesting, too, is they were actually announcing making a film of that back even in 1939 at Warner Brothers. There was talk about making a film called Dillinger, John Dillinger Outlaw, that was going to star Jimmy Cagney as Melvin Purvis and Humphrey Bogart or George Raft as Dillinger. But that film never got made, so I don't know. Apparently he was a hands-off topic for a number of years for studios, although they did make a film on Mal Barker, which is interesting. But when it came to Dillinger, they didn't want to actually make a picture on him until the King brothers did the film with Tierney in 45.
Who was Mar Barker? I know Mar Barker was Shelley Winters way down the line. Who was the first Mar Barker?
Well, Mar Barker, the first was actually a series of films they made, I think, it was MGM or Paramount, I'm not sure. They did a film where she wasn't called Mar Barker, she had a different name. But it was one of those crime does not pay, one of those types of little, B picture things that they did.
Oh, and it's like maybe 45 minutes or an hour. It's
one of those
film.
Little shorts.
Yeah.
Like they did with the Bonnie and Clyde thing with J. Carol Nash Patricia Morrison.
And they do Bonnie things about venereal disease and other things like
yeah,
that.
Exactly, yeah, exactly, those things. And I think it was an actress named Blanche Yerka. Played Ma Webster, that was the name, but it was totally based on the Ma Barker character. But Dillinger, they didn't touch until they did the King Brothers film back in 45 with Tierney.
And then...
Which was really fictionalized anyway, because the way they played Dillinger in that film, he's a total psychotic. I mean, he shoves a broken beer glass into a guy's face at one point and kills somebody else with an axe. Like, if you read about the real Dillinger, who I wrote about in my book, Dust Bowl Desperados, Gangsters of the Dirty 30s.
This is true. It's not about the actors. It's about the real gangsters. And
yeah, he avoided...
Myth. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the thing in my book that I wrote, basically, is I wanted to look at all angles of it, but I also realized that a lot of these stories, I think, should be looked at from a different side as well, because, Dillinger, from what I've read and from, he deliberately never killed anyone, apparently. Apparently, in a gunfight once, he shot a cop who fell into the line of fire. He shot a cop in the legs and fell into the line of machine gun fire and was killed. And because of that, they made him out to be a murderer. Apparently, Dillinger really tried to avoid violence. He was a bank robber. He wasn't a killer.
Wasn't he public enemy number one?
He was the first public enemy number one, exactly, yep.
So if we go back to Lawrence Tierney, he did that film, but the one that really showed him off was Born to Kill in 1947.
Yes, that was probably his best-known picture, I think, where he doesn't really play a gangster, but he plays a sociopathic killer.
Amazing
guy
performance.
Who's an opportunistic.
And yeah, Claire Trevor was great in it. And who's that lady? She reminds me of the character in your new book with the milky eye that doesn't stare. Remember?
Yeah, I know who
she
you're
comes
talking
after about. Him and tries to find out who killed her friend. Yeah, and then mean old Claire Trevor comes and is like, "Whoa, this is wow!"
Oh yeah, she's as bad as he is. Actually,
yeah,
in that picture,
so it came to a good ending, but it was a really good film, and
it was a good film. Yeah,
I liked it a lot. I mean, he was such a rotten creep.
And then Tierney played. Yeah, he played other characters like in The Devil Thumbs a Ride, Shakedown,
The Hoodlum. And he also, in 1952, he played the train saboteur in Cecil B. DeMille's The Greatest Show on Earth.
Well, here's the problem, because the thing is, DeMille really enjoyed Tierney. He thought he was really good in the role, and he wanted to offer Tierney more film roles. But Tierney, once again, sabotaged his career, got into a drunken brawl, probably got arrested, I'm pretty sure he did. And, DeMille was kind of a purist. And he says, "I'm not going to associate myself with this guy." So he dropped any kind of a contract he was going to have Tierney sign. So Tierney ends up doing crap like The Female Jungle and ends up
with
New York.
Who was that? That was
Mamie
Van Doren, right? And a bartender.
Mamie Van Doren.
He had mental problems as well.
He had to have had, because he a lot of people have said that if Tierney liked you, really liked you, he was the best friend you could ever have. I think Chris Penn, who was in Reservoir Dogs, said that they got along fantastically. Michael Madsen, who was in Reservoir Dogs as well, had some problems with Tierney, and a lot of people did. They said that he just, you never knew, even when he wasn't drinking, when he gave up alcohol,
right,
he still would do, like in Seinfeld, the famous Seinfeld episode, The Jacket.
I have never seen that.
They were terrified.
And I wrote that.
Oh, you got
it. Yeah, I'll have to see it, but I read about it today. Why don't you tell the story or what happened there?
Well, basically, you know, they brought him on as to play Elaine Bennis's author father. And he had to play, you know, a part like a really hard, tough guy. And, you know, George and Jerry are pretty much terrified of meeting with them. And he intimidates them to no end. And apparently the same thing happened off the set as well, where Tierney kind of was crazy. I mean, he came after Jerry Seinfeld once with a knife behind him, just kind of playing, but he's doing the Psycho theme song, pretending to jab this knife into his back and doing all sorts of things to intimidate the cast and crew. And they said, even though they had him in mind to be a recurring character, they said, we're not ever going to bring this guy back again.
They were scared of him.
Because he would have been great.
He would have been great. He was just playing. I wish I will try to find that episode because I can't even. And he sobered up. He did a lot of stuff. He appeared in Pritzi's Honor, The Naked Gun. And he was also on Hill Street Blues. Is that it?
Yeah.
I never knew.
He said the very last line in the last episode of Hill Street, let's be careful out there. That was the very last line on that show, he said.
We could tell you this long story about this amazing Eddie Muller encounter with Lawrence Tierney. It is such a good read. And when I post this show, I'm going to post the link to Eddie's story on Tierney. It was just like, wow. It was...
Well,
go on.
Grace, also post the Skippy Lowe interview.
Oh, yes. You have to send it to me.
I'll send that to you. You've got to see that. You've really got to see that interview. It's really interesting because Tierney comes across as really quite the gentleman on that show. And, you know, Skippy Lowe is kind of an...
He's just...
Well, he was kind of an interesting little interviewer, yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't he a child star?
I think so. I believe
he was great friends
with
Mamie Van Doren and all those kids.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
But it's funny to watch that interview because Lawrence Tierney really is on his best behavior. You know, when you see that,
and he could really pound him down to nothing if he felt like it, you know, because he was really such a tough guy. He really was. And
he was a tough guy, but I'll tell you, two people that I knew who actually worked with Tierney or knew Tierney, my friend Mickey Knox, who was an actor who played in films like Knock on Any Door, White Heat, pictures like that. He did a movie with Lawrence Tierney, and Mickey told me, he said, you know, Lawrence Tierney was the toughest guy I ever met. When he'd get into a fight with you, he'd want to kill you, which kind of makes sense when you look at those pictures that you can see of him being hauled to the jail. On the other side, another friend of mine who was an actress, Marja Dean, she knew Tierney socially, and she said he was, when sober, he was just the most wonderful gentleman. So the guy really was a Jekyll and Hyde personality.
Yeah, so that would account for sort of maybe bipolar or some kind of thing. They said they took him away in a straitjacket once. Also, an interesting little tidbit is that he never married, but he did have a daughter. And a woman committed suicide. She jumped off a fourth floor window. And they brought Tierney in because he came into the apartment. He was going to visit a friend. And he said she fell from the fourth floor window. And he was considered for a while as a murder suspect.
Yes.
I think that was 74.
I'm not sure of the year, but something else that's interesting, and figure this one out, because it might have some connection to whatever Tierney's psychology was his mother committed suicide.
And he had two brothers.
He had two brothers, Scott and Edward, yeah.
I can't imagine, yeah. How does mom commit suicide?
I don't know the whole story behind that. Again, a lot of this stuff when it comes to Tierney is kind of like shrouded in secrecy. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice. I really hope at some point someone writes a book about him because it would be interesting to find out really the truth behind it because he has to be one of the most interesting.
He really is. You know,
he really is, definitely.
And another one, I think he needs a whole show. I think he deserves a whole show, Tierney. But also Steve Cochran, I think.
Oh, yeah.
What a character. What a death. Still a mystery. He was fabulous in White Heat. I thought he was a hubba hubba dude. And I thought he was a really good actor, you know, for what he did. I thought he was very good. And
well, he was a crazy man off camera. Too.
Yes.
I mean, don't forget he had some arrest records.
Yeah, he was
and
a nut.
Went through some marriages.
Yeah.
And I remember watching an interview. His best friend was Max Baird Jr., who played Jethro on the Beverly Hills.
Jethro was a little wild turkey.
Well, they were both. But I remember watching an interview with Max, and he said, you know, you wouldn't want to get into a car with Steve Cochran because you never knew if you're going to come out alive, because he drove like a speed demon. He lived on the edge. I mean, you know, really, he was a wild, not quite as crazy as Tierney, but he was a wild man, that's for sure.
Yeah, and he died a lot younger than he should have, that's for sure. And Max Baer Jr. also, his dad was Max Baer, the boxer, and dated Jean Harlow.
Yes.
For a little while there.
Yep.
Okay, so.
All connected, isn't it?
It is.
It's all connected.
But I love all this stuff, and I love all this.
Me too.
I've had a blast with you, and I do want you to come back on, and we talk about Steve Cochran, the 50s, the 60s gangsters. And we'll do another episode about this, because this is so interesting. And we shall do this again, I hope.
Well, It's always a pleasure to talk with you, Grace. I love talking old movie history, you know, the crime films of the era, the whole, you know, the real to the R-A-L to the R-E-E-L gangster stuff. And, it's a real pleasure. So I'm looking forward to our next conversation.
We will, and it'll be fun. And we'll talk about a little bit about Steve Cochran, a little bit about the 50s stuff, Burt Lancaster, other things who did the gangster movies and how they changed.
Oh, yes. The 50s was a whole different era, you bet. From
yeah.
The 30s to the 40s to the 50s, 60s.
Everything really changed.
Into the 70s with The Godfather.
Yes. So we're going to talk about that the next time. I am reading. I haven't been because I'm wearing a patch right now.
I
read a lot for this podcast because I want to read and know what I'm talking about. And so, but Stone has this wonderful book out that is this your first novel?
No, it's my 20th.
Wow. Oh, the Western ones, right?
Well, I started off writing horror novels.
Oh, cool.
And I went into history.
I came out
of college and I wanted to be a writer. And I figured at the time Stephen King was the big writer. So I figured if I want to break into being a novelist, might as well write a horror novel, which I did. I wrote three horror novels in the beginning. And then I moved into histories and to biographies and westerns. And this is my first. I did the book Dust Bowl Desperados based on true history of gangsters of the 30s. But this is my first gangster novel.
And it's very good. It's called Requiem for a Gangster by Stone Wallace. And it is a good read. It's a noir novel, really.
It's a noir, yes.
And your other book, of course, George Raft, the man who would be Bogart. And the one you did with Dana and Lisa.
Conversations with Cagney, absolutely. And if you know what, actually, if I can say something, if anybody is interested in taking a look at the type of writing that I do, including some interviews I've done, I'm still adding content.
Cool.
But I do have a website that if I could mention that to the
listeners. Of course, please do. And I will also link you when I post.
Oh, bless you. It's www.stonewallace.com. .net. Simple as that, and you get an idea of the books that I've written and the interviews. Some of them, like I say, there's still stuff being added to the site.
Yes,
but,
there's so
got,
much stuff.
Information there.
You thought you sent me, but you didn't. So I can't wait to see the skip blow with Tierney. That should be fabulous.
I appreciate that, and like I said, I will definitely send you that Skip Elo interview with Tierney. I really want you to post that because I think you'll enjoy it, and I think people who don't know who Lawrence Tierney is but would be interested in learning more about him would certainly, between the Big Leak article by our friend Eddie Muller. And,
it's fabulous. What an article. I said, Eddie, you were doing God's work.
Yes,
you were doing
absolutely.
God's work, Eddie.
It, wonderful stuff. So,
it
yeah.
is.
And other actors that we can discuss, Charles McGraw we should talk about, and Dan Duryea.
Oh, my God. I was thinking of him today. I love Dan Duryea. I just...
What a wonderful actor.
He is one of my favorite wormy creeps ever of the films. And you know, and I was watching Scarlet Street the other night, and I'm like, what?
Yeah, I love that movie.
Johnny.
Oh, I love that movie.
That's a fabulous movie. So, yes, definitely. And we'll talk about
it. Because, you know, Dan Duryea is one of those guys like Widmark, you know, who could play the most dastardly characters, yet in real life was just a real wonderful, kind human being.
With family six man. Kids, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Six kids, you know, never had any negative things written about him. Again, like Jimmy Cagney and that, you know, just good people.
I love him. Love him, love him, love him. So I am looking forward to this Stone, and we will this hopefully, you know, soon. Do a part two.
Whenever you're ready.
Whenever
you're ready, I'll look forward to it.
I'm armed and deadly here, kid.
Okay, sounds good.
I'm not a pistol packing mama, but I'm ready. Okay, so I want
to. You're not Bonnie Parker. Yeah.
No, I am not. I'm actually a person who abhors violence, but does like my gangster movies and my gangster actors. What can I say? Anyway,
well, you know who said that was Jack LaRue. Jack LaRue told me I abhor violence. Yet he played some of the roughest, toughest gangsters in movies, but he did not like or like Widmark. Same thing. I just do not.
It just, no. But yet I watch the movies.
Me too.
But believe me, just not that kind of gal. Anyway, I want to thank again Stone Wallace for coming on. I have loved speaking to you just as I did the first time. Looking forward to talking about Dan Duryea and all those other wonderful people. And thank you guys for listening. I'm getting lots of new listeners, and I so appreciate you guys coming in and my old listeners for hanging in, and many guests to come, many fun guests as I've had. So thank you so much. And Stone, I so appreciate it. And I will talk to you guys soon. Thank you. Thanks, Stone.
Thank you. Had a great time.
Bye, everybody.
The Club. His pants falling down, or the dance that's a dream of romance, or the scene where the villain is mean. That's entertainment. The lights on the lady in tights, or the bride with the guy on the side, or the ball where she gives him her all. That's entertainment. A fight like you see on the screen, a swain getting slain for the love of a queen, some great Shakespearean scene where a ghost and a prince meet and everyone ends in mincemeat. The gag may be waving the flag that began with the Mr. Cohan. Hip hooray, the American way. The stage is a world of...